Best mates, talking the sport they love. Hamish and Dean, join RSN Central.
Good morning to you, Dean Lester.
Hello there, Gareth. Good morning to you. I just heard you talking to Michael Felgate about Jackie's dress.
Yes.
The good thing is that Hamish has said that if there's a market available, he's prepared to wear Graham Teasdale's suit, the velour suit from 1977, just to get us a price.
Yes.
So that's something.
I can't believe
we need a market.
I can't believe there is no market for Hamish McLaughlin, what he's wearing there come Sunday night.
Well, we'll bring the boys and girls that make the markets, Gareth, and make sure that if there is a market, we absolutely get it right. What I have been contemplating listening to you and Michael,
yes,
is that it's not out of the question to think that Jackie might be able to wear a number of dresses throughout the night. We can really fill up with
okay.
a multi where
bit of a Lady Gaga
red,
style changes.
Goes to the green, shimmies yeah. into the red. Hard not to pay out if
Ollie
Wines
hits the lead. She wears yes. teal for a bit.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. Red and blue when Ollie's out in front. The red, white yeah. and black when Jack Steele starts to charge. It's yeah. like, okay, four-leg multi. Feel it coming.
Fantastic.
And when you put up a betting type like that, you're going to expect people like us to do our research for the punters out there.
Well, as long as there's people like Dean and yourself in the world, there's going to be yeah. huge corruption. Get ready for it.
Hey, do you like this week off in between? It couldn't be helped this year because the poor old doggies are still in quarantine over there in Perth. But it's a long wait, Dean. I don't mind it. I can be patient. We've been patient enough. In lockdown.
Yeah.
I know there's some people that just say, well, I wish it was on this weekend. But
Look, I think it'll be the new normal because this is the first year we've had the 12 days concussion rule, and I think it takes any sort of grey area away from the doctors. They've got 14 clear days to get a player right about concussion and not tell lies or not be covering things up and just saying it was a head clash and not a concussion, those sort of things. So I actually think it was on the cards. It's been brought forward maybe a bit early, Haim, because of the circumstances of this year, but it's probably the right thing going forward.
The one thing I do love is having the best teams playing. I'm glad that yep. Stephen May is going to play. I'm glad that Alex yep. Keith is going to be right to play. So I would hate Melbourne to go in undermanned and I'd hate the Dogs to go in undermanned. So I don't like waiting for the grand final. We're all this generation where everything needs to be now, now, now. But I love the fact that we'll have the two best teams of the year fit and healthy and rolling along. And Cody Waitman's a great example. So he, in the semi, gets concussed, would have missed a prelim. If he gets knocked out in the prelim, you can't miss a grand final for that. But I love the 12-day concussion protocol because of the sanctity of the head. So I don't know where it ends up. I know that the grand final can't come fast enough, but the outcomes are going to be good.
And I think in a normal year, Dino, we could have the TAC Cup grand final, the VFL grand final in between the preliminary and grand final weekends in the AFL. It's a great opportunity for the sport that we love, of course, thoroughbred racing, to take centre stage.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to be showcased in that week, both by AFL, VFL, as you said, the country leagues, and of course racing. So I think everyone can be a winner out of it. And we've become lovers of American sport, and the NFL do that, don't they? Leading into Super Bowl, the 2 week break, so it just builds the excitement. And I think I'm more than happy with it this year.
We should have a media day like they do over in the States, especially for the NFL. And Dean Hamish should be front and centre. Set up a little booth there at the media day, and away we go.
I think with the week offs, let's assume they said we're going to go forward with it. There would be a very neat program put together, whether it's the AFL MVP or the Coaches' Night or the Brownlow. Yep. You'd be able to fill the fortnight pretty comfortably.
Yeah, exactly.
Our topic of conversation today, there's a
EJ Witten Legends game as well. Yep. You raise $1 million for the right charity.
Gareth's still waiting for the call.
Yep.
Jeez, where would you play, Gareth? Forward line or?
I'd be the runner. That's where I'm probably best fit these days. I enjoy my time.
There'd be a lot of thirsty players.
Yes. Especially if there's night racing and we're in the middle of the Moonee Valley
Quaddie.
Any chance
of Gareth bringing the water down to the forward line? Or are you just trying to get a third leg of the multi up at Melton?
Our topic of conversation today, there's a few, but the main one will be, and we'll discuss this a little later on, the best individual performances across a single season that you can remember. They can be either for a team or an individual. Jamie Carr would have been one of those, and it still is a talking point, Dino, with the season that she had, creating history here in Melbourne, the first ever jockey to ride 100 Metro winners in a Melbourne season. But she's been given an extra couple of months today, 5 months, in fact. So she won't be back until just after Australia Day now, Dino. It's a fair old whack.
You mentioned fair. I think it's fair. You can't lie to the stewards, and in times of what we've been doing, it's the COVID rules stick, and it's really unfortunate, and would never be a good time to have 5 months off, but it's just an unfortunate situation, but I've got no real issue with it.
Yep. So 5 months, so she'll be out. She'll be back just basically at the start of the summer. Autumn Carnival. So that's the news today. Jamie Carr out for 5 months now. Hey, Hamish, we'll start off with your Hall of Fame. I always enjoy this, but we're kicking off with a individual that has been elevated to legend status, which always excites me.
Well, I think we're talking about a man that was an extraordinary bowler for the West Indies, and I think then became an even better broadcaster. And the close of one of the most distinguished modern broadcasting careers was announced this week. So Michael Holding will hang up his mic at the end of the season. He started with Sky Sports a couple of decades ago. And now I think at the end of his playing season, so he started in 1988, and he's brought the same sort of grace to the commentary box as his run-up during his playing days. And that was so smooth, he was named Whispering Death. And he's always been able to articulate things in a manner which have you thinking differently, and he did it last year.
But what I want to expand on the award is what I said about education. Education is important unless we just want to continue living the life that we are living and continue just having demonstrations every now and again and a few people saying a few things. And when I say education, I mean going back in history. What people need to understand is that this thing stems from a long time ago, hundreds of years ago. The dehumanization of the black race is where it started. And people will tell you, oh, that's a long time ago, get over it. No, you don't get over things like that. And the society has not gotten over something like that. I'll skip all the gap between those long years ago and make one point and then go backward. That lady in the Central Park in New York, Amy Cooper, I think is her name. If she did not have in her DNA the thought process that she was white, this man is black, if I call a police officer, 9 times out of 10 he's going to be white, I'm going to be considered right immediately. The black guy will have to prove that he's not guilty, and by the time he proves that he's not guilty, he might be dead. She had that in her mind from day one. That is why she said and did what she did.
So he was always able, Dean, to talk about whatever was in front of him and whatever was going around in society. I remember there was a spot-fixing scandal in 2010, and he was admiring the skills of Muhammad Asif and Muhammad Amir, and he was talking about how talented they were, and it became obvious that they were spot-fixing, and there was some extraordinary big no-balls from Amir, and he just needed a moment to compose himself. And then he talked about the sadness of a talented 18-year-old being dragged into fixing, but he was never too scared to just confront the issue. And he did it in a manner that was always measured. And I met him at Newmarket once, and he is one of the great racing fanatics of all time. And he lives in Newmarket. He goes up and watches them work up the heath, and he'll be missed, sadly, by all cricket fans.
Certainly. He was, growing up, he was, I thought, the most elegant bowler I'd ever seen, the way he just came into the wicket and then just pounded it in at 150 Ks, just off such a relaxed run-up. And then, as you said, as a commentator, he's taken it even further. And as you said, a total racing nut. You had him on That's Racing, and that's where he seemed to really light up, talking about his horses and talking about the horses.
Have you ever heard of a nap? Like in England, they talk about the nap of the day, which is the. I can't remember why or where nap comes from, but I remember he used to walk into Michael Bell's yard at Newmarket, where I would stay a bit, and say, "Michael, what's the nap of the day?" And he had the best voice of all time. And I've got to order this book. I haven't yet, but he wrote a book, Why We Kneel, How We Rise, talking around taking a knee. So that'll be interesting reading. But no, you'll be missed. He's my Hall of Famer. that gets inducted and elevated.
He played 60 test matches. He took 249 wickets at a bowling average of 23.6. But I think his greatest achievement in life, he's been doing a little work, Dino and Hamish, for Sky Sports Racing up there in England. And he interviewed Ryan Moore after he got off a horse. And he's the only presenter that I've come across in the world of racing media that's been able to get a smile on Ryan Moore's face. And it was the great Michael Holding that delivered that beauty for everybody out there. So he's done it all on the cricketing field. But I think that's his greatest ever achievement, Dino and Hamish.
Yes, for those Australians that tried to do that after Ryan Moore won a Cox Plate in the Melbourne Cup within 10 days of each other and couldn't achieve it.
Yes. So. Have you ever met an athlete like that, Hamish, that he's just too shy and he doesn't give much away in Ryan Moore? Like, they tell him he's not that bad of a bloke, but he's just a really difficult man he's a difficult man to watch after he wins a big race because it looks like he's not enjoying it.
I was looking at some footage the other day. I think it was John Gosden, maybe, that had a quinella in a big race, and there wasn't a lot of emotion. I think sometimes, and Nick Riewoldt talked about it once. He said everyone thinks I've got a resting bitch face, but it's sort of a serious face that he goes to work with. Nick Riewoldt's got huge layers to him, and he's very amusing, very serious at times, very emotional at times. Sometimes I think the face doesn't really tell the whole story. And maybe that's it with Ryan Moore. I've never met Ryan, but I've never seen him get too engaged in an interview and show too much emotion.
It's 10:45. You're with Dean and Hamish here on RSN Central. We need to take a quick break. No Healesville Dogs today, unfortunately. We've got Cranbourne a little later on, so we'll miss the Cranbourne Dogs that started at 11:30. But we'll come back with Hamish's Hall of Fame nomination. We'll also have a chat about our favourite moments or our favourite athletes that have performed a season to remember. So that's coming up next here on RSN Central. You're with Gareth Hall, Dean Lester, Hamish McLaughlin here on RSN Central. It's 10:48. There's some news breaking out of Perth regarding the Melbourne football team. Have you heard this, lads? Slight curveball to the start of the day for the Melbourne Football Club. Simon Goodwin and Adam Uze have woken up feeling unwell and are isolating from the team. The coach will miss training and his scheduled media conference today, expected hopefully to be back tomorrow. There you go. So hopefully the bug is going through the team this week and not next week.
Hopefully it's just a bug.
Yep. Now, the second of your Hall of Famers today, Hamish?
Well, he would love to be, I'm sure, as a part of the Demons training session today, but he won't be. He started in 06 after being picked up the year before. He debuted in round 17, 06, played 8 games, won 2. And from then on, played 20 or more until 2017 when he played 16, 25 in 18, 22 in 19, just 8 last year and just 8 this year. Finishes with 302. The wins in his career, far and few between. Have a listen to this, Dino. You're playing from 2006 until this year, 302 games. You win 3, 5, 3, 4, 8, 8, 4, 2, 4, 7, 10, double digits, 9, 16, 5, 5, and 8. 101 wins from 302 outings. Nathan Jones into the Hall of Fame.
Deservedly so, too, Hame. He's weathered a very, very tough storm there for many years, held his head high, held the club together, and like a lot of players, just hasn't quite been there for the absolute fruits of the labour maybe next Saturday, but is an integral part of what's happened.
I think this is a terrific tribute to Nathan Jones from his teammates. It starts off with Jack Viney. We also hear from Christian Petrarca, Clayton Oliver and Maxi Gawn.
My earliest memories of Nathan Jones was when I got to the club. You came across as a very intimidating figure.
My first training session was with him. Yeah, it was a bit of a wake-up call with the AFL.
I did my first memory of Nathan Jones, which I remember clearly, was I'd just been drafted and our manager had organised him to pick me up. So I can hear him before he rocks up. He's playing this gangster music and rocks up in this black truck, all black, wearing a black singlet with black sunnies and black pants, and he had sleeves out and very intimidating.
Petrarca able to get rid of one, wriggling loose, gives it on to the old campaigner Joe.
You you could see what he meant to the Melbourne fans when he kicked the goal against Geelong in our final in 2018. The crowd absolutely erupted and, you know, you could see the players get behind him.
Have a listen to the Melbourne fans.
Turn to the crowd and I think it's, you know, I get goosebumps even thinking about it. To see him be able to do that and the smile on his face after the game was absolutely amazing.
He's one of the best articulators. I'm not sure if that's a word, but I'm going to run with it. He gets right involved with our young players. He's involved in their WhatsApp, which I'm sure he wouldn't get any of their slang.
He's like a dad. He gets angry and frustrated sometimes with us young boys, but at the same time, he loves and cares about us.
I feel like he's been the oldest player at the club the whole time I've been there. He's actually very different, I reckon, what people would imagine. One of the, like, kindest, softest spoken people you would come across.
So much rest here on the experienced shoulders of Nathan Jones, and he's got it!
Every time I've sort of come up against him, that's challenged me. Jonesy's been right there for me. He's been a terrific support.
He's the heart and soul of the club at the moment. I couldn't speak more highly of this.
He typifies what we want to become as Melbourne people, as Melbourne Football Club players.
A chance for Jones, does it sit? He's going to play to the back of the net, and he does.
He's promised me that he's going to get a tattoo of my head on his right butt cheek if we win a flag, so... That's the last spot that's left, I think. So I'm claiming his right butt cheek. His left one's taken.
So there's his teammates, Hamish, Jake Lever, and also Angus Brasher was part of that tribute to Nathan Jones. And when your teammates speak as highly as they just did about you, you must be pretty proud. And you don't really need a premiership medal to walk away satisfied, I guess, but walk away proud of what you've been able to do.
No, and he, through the darkest of times, always continued to lead. He didn't drop his head. And they were getting booed off the ground at times in, you know, 08 and 09 and that 11, 12 and 13 period when they won, 4-2 and four games from 12, 13 and 14. They were getting absolutely belted. There was sort of seemingly no way out or through. And, you know, he just continued to front up to all the press conferences, captain the club, won the best and fairest in 12, 13 and 14 in those years. And disappointing that he won't, Dino, be there next weekend, but sort of it's funny how things work. He had healthy twins during the week, and that's a hell of a good outcome either way.
It certainly is, Haim. And just doing some research, you know, with the Brownlow in mind, and just shows you how dark a place Melbourne were. In 2013, they were the fewest votes by a club in a season in the history of the Brownlow, 16 votes collectively. Wow.
And just sorry, Gareth, it's funny, Mark Walkley, who's a horse owner, had a few good horses in his day, North Boy and others, has texted in saying he's the biggest Melbourne fan I know. He said, the bug, more on the bug, please. What's happening with the bug?
Yes, the bug. Well, we're still trying to find out a little bit more, but at the moment, Uze and Simon Goodwin have woken up crook this morning. So
now, they're staying at the same place as Geelong was staying home, do you think?
I'll text Goody right now and I'll see what's happening.
That'll be much appreciated, Hamish. It makes me think, if Joel Salwood went to Melbourne and Nathan Jones went to Geelong, what careers they would have had.
Yeah, right place, right time, maybe. Right. Does Joel make the club better? Absolutely. Does Nathan make Melbourne better? Absolutely. Would have Nathan played in a grand final in his first year? I would think absolutely. What draft picks? They're different years. Nathan went in 05 and Joel was 06, but yeah.
Dino, you've got a story that you want to tell us regarding the 1990 premiership year for the Collingwood Football Club and the unlucky player there.
Yeah, we're talking about unlucky players to miss out on grand finals with Nathan Jones, obviously. And 1990, I think Alan Richardson's story, he had a collarbone problem in the second semi-final, and he trained pretty quietly leading into it. And on the Thursday was the big last training session at Victoria Park. And we'll let the audio tell the story from there.
Well, Alan Richardson broke his collarbone in the second semi-final.
Up the ground by Kelly was good play. Richardson.
Initially, there was a bit of resignation that probably only lasted perhaps the rest of that day. And then just, no, this is not going to happen. I'm going to do whatever I can to get myself right.
Well, it looks like he'll be okay. He must have made it a bit of a surprise to me. I thought last week he was sort of no chance, but he's done much better this week than I certainly thought.
I was doing all the training without the combative part of training, and I was convinced myself that I was right to go.
I was always going to put him for a pretty brutal fitness test.
So I was a little bit unlucky there because he was not that long out of the game. He was an incredibly powerful man.
15,000-20,000 people watching this go down. And he sort of relaxed, and Lee knew he'd relax, and then Lee just went bang.
Basically just ran through me, ran over the top of me.
I remember at the time thinking, gee, that's a bit harsh.
Had to be done. Had to be done.
At the time, because I was just on incredible adrenaline trying to prove that I was fit to play in, you know, this massive game for a kid that had barracked for the Collingwood Footy Club all his life. And I ran off thinking, gee, I'm a chance here. Woke up in the morning, I'm in a lot of pain, a lot of pain. I'd semi-knitted, if you like, in the fracture in the collarbone, and Lee had made amends to that.
He put his hand up and said, we won't worry about a Friday fitness test. I know I'm not right.
You think, gee whiz, I was that close. That was a tough time.
I fell for Alan Richardson, but we had to make some brutal decisions to make sure that we didn't fail.
That's from the Rob Dixon doco, Haim, the final story about the 1990 grand final. And, gee, the audio tells a story, but you see the vision and the look on Alan Richardson's face when he's retelling the story, and it hurts to this day.
Yeah, so many players, Dino, get so close. And, you know, there's not going to be a nice conversation for either Ryan Gardner or Zane Cordy and who replaces, who does Waitman replace? You know, it's going to be the same again this year, but Lee Matthews has got an amazing sense of pragmatism to him. He's also got an amazing sense of brutality. But when you heard Alan Richardson there say, had to be done, he was also understanding of it, but your heart breaks for him. And there'll be someone this year that's the 24th man.
But if you're a player that's just striving to get into a grand final side after you've battled injury, you'd don't really want Lee Matthews to be your coach giving you a fitness test, because that's that famous story that you've told on several occasions on this show here, Hamish, regarding Nigel Lappin heading into that grand final for the Lions when Matthews smashed him as well.
Yeah, and he got through. God knows how if you've had broken ribs or had lungs that have got a bit of damage to them, I'm not quite sure how you play 2 hours at that pace and that freneticism, but Nigel Lappin did. I think one of the Scots, I can't remember whether it was Chris or Brad, was told as a result of Nigel passing it very, very late. I think it was Chris, you're not in, you're out. Yeah. Nigel's in.
No.
In the rooms.
Yeah. 10:58, you're with Gareth Hall, Dean Lester and Hamish McLaughlin here on Dean and Hamish. Talking about wonderful seasons, I don't think I've ever seen a player dominate an AFL season like this man did in 2017.
Announced the most valuable player for this year.
The winner of the 2017 Norm Smith Medal.
I declare the winner of the 2017 Brownlow Medal
is Dustin Martin.
Is Dustin Martin.
Dustin Martin of the Richmond Football Club.
Oh, Dusty. Oh, I love watching you play. You do things like that.
His presence. This man machine. Dustin Martin.
Come down to Dusty. Oh, Dusty, Dusty. In the big last quarter, just sense he's the man. Drag his team over the line.
Greg going to be tackled immediately, slapped it down cleverly. Martin's a chance from there. Can he beat the round? You bet he can, Dusty.
He's on his own and he's going to get it. Traps it beautifully. Swings around now, snaps it towards goal and kicks a sensational goal.
It was amazing watching Dusty in that year, Hamish. He just could do nothing wrong. And every time you watched him, you thought, well, Richmond can't get beat if he's playing.
Well, the Brownlow votes themselves sum it up. So Dane Swan got 34 in 2011, and that was thought to be a number that was going to be hard to be beaten. And then Fife in 15 got into the 30s again with 31. Dangerfield went past Swan with 35 in 16. And then Dustin Martin got 36 votes in that year. The Norm Smith, as well as that extraordinary run of just dominant performances. I think Lee Matthews, I think Dean said, it was this year, he's the only player I don't get offended by when compared to.
Right.
it was tongue-in-cheek, but it was also... It was tongue-in-cheek, but a massive tip of the hat to a player that he loves.
And why not? I mean, that was the complete season. And then you think of the moments that he's had in the other premiership years or in other years, and it's just a complete CV.
Do you think you'd put that quote on your on your wall there in your pub, in the pub room there, if you Dusty Martin that quote from Lee Matthews, or do you think
I'd have it tattooed somewhere if you had space?
0416 90 50 52 to join our conversation. Heartbreaking AFL stories before a grand final, and also the best ever seasons that you've seen in sport. The Bombers have been mentioned on a few occasions there, Hamish and Dino, and in 2000 they. It sort of was hard to believe that they lost that match late in the season to the Doggies, but then they went on to dominate a final series and easily win that premiership. But they were a side that you just knew they would nearly win every game in that year. They were that much better than everybody else.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think there was too much heartache there. I mean, it was a completely dominant season. I was looking at McEnroe's record in 84. He played 85 matches, Dino, in 84 and won 82 of them. That's some sort of a dominance.
It's a fair season, isn't it? The four different surfaces and everywhere he went, remarkable.
Hey, Tom,
just in terms
No, Tom, just as we're talking a little bit about tennis, Tom has asked the question to Dino and Hamish: is Novak Djokovic, in your eyes, the best to ever play the game, despite losing that final at New York last week?
My view is...
No, your heart, your head, not your heart, Hamish.
Yeah.
No, I'm going to try and put it into context. My view is Federer is the most beautiful player we've ever seen, and I think everyone knows he's my favourite player. But if you said to me, put the three, Rafa, Roger and Novak together, all at their best, and put them at the Australian Open final, Roland Garros final, Wimbledon final and US Open final, Novak wins most of those three against each other, all at their best. Rafa dominates on clay, probably. I think Novak dominates probably at the front end and the back end at the Australian Open and the US, and Roger at his very best might beat Novak, but I think on balance, Novak gets there. And that pains me to say it.
Did it just get to him trying to win the Grand Slam on Monday?
Like, I can't believe it was anything else, Dean, than pressure. I mean, Medvedev went out swinging, but you would think Novak, if he was playing even at 85, 90% of how he normally goes, he grabs a set or so to go out in straight sets.
Yeah, it was
straight sets. So, yeah, I think so. And it's a big mountain that he's trying to get to the top of, 20 majors apiece, to go past Roger and past Rafa. You'd be thinking about it, plus the Golden Slam, you know?
Yeah.
The career slam.
The post game when he burst into tears, it just looked as though he realised, you know, this might be the closest I ever get to the slam in one year, because it's such a hot, big mountain to climb, you know, to get through that far. And yeah, I mean, we had a few surprises on the weekend, whether it be the football or racing, but it was nearly the biggest shock of all that he got beaten in straight sets.
It's interesting. Yep. Mentally, he might have not have been used to people cheering him on. He was more popular, I think, in that final than Medvedev, which says something about poor old Daniil Medvedev.
Not a great look.
No, that's not a great look. Hey, what about Brownlow betting? Because Dino, we all know that he's the greatest judge when it comes to thoroughbred racing, Hamish, but I don't think everybody knows that he loves the Brownlow medal as well, digging deep and analysing previous Brownlow medals to help us back a winner. So, and I know that you do your research better than anyone as well regarding the Brownlow medal in preparation for Sunday night. So we have the two perfect individuals, punters, to help us out with this year's Brownlow. So we'll start with you, Hamish, and then you can lead Dino.
Okay, so I speak to a man that does a little more than Dino on it, and every weekend, this is his full-time role, getting set for the agency. So his role is to allocate all nine games every round to those that he thinks gets votes. It's not a 3-2-1 system. He ends up with a couple of decimal points. So a player can get 1.25 votes depending on, you know, how the algorithm punches it out after he's put all of the data in. But he has four players within 1.93 votes. He's got the winner at 29.95 votes, second 29.89, so 0.06 separating those two. The next 28.92, so 1.03 votes separating the top three. The fourth 28.02. So you've got 1.93 votes with the first four, so a huge chance of a tie. There's a three vote drop to fifth, 25. Sixth, 24. So we're thinking late 20s, Dino, is going to be where it is. He's got the four in market order in a different order to the market slightly, but he's got in no particular order because I'll just give them to you. Steele, Wines, Oliver and Bont. He's got those four separated by a vote. Now, to add some flavour to it, Dino, he's got Steele starting very, very slowly and rocketing home. He thinks he will vote in six, definitely, maybe seven, and maybe all eight of the last eight games. He's got Bont having this purple patch through the middle of the year from about round 8 to round 17, and he wonders how many votes he gets late just because the umpires see it as Bont. He's got Sam Walsh picking up potentially 9 to 12 votes from 15 through to 18. Oliver and Wines even all year. Petrarca, he's got favourite by round 6. So there's plenty of storylines, but he's got four separated by one.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. And I don't think that the winner will get above 30 votes this year. If they do, that would be a major surprise to me. I've backed Bont, but I know he's going to be, I think, probably staggering late. And Ollie Wines has just had that really solid season. So they're the two for me. Buoyed by the Jack Steele comments and be watching him charge home. If he gets any votes early, might be betting in the run punters.
Sounds like he's going. Sorry.
No, that's the one thing that he did mention. He said if Jack Steele gets votes early, you know he's getting the late. And he's got him 1.03 off the leader, and he doesn't have him getting any early. So if he does get them early, gamble responsibly, but maybe think about Steele winning the lot.
It'll be an
amazing. Can you get a market for a tie, Gareth?
I'll just check with the tab. I think we can get a market for the tie because Jack Steele would be a great story. It sounds like it's going to be a little bit like the 1996 Cox Plate, Dino, four across the track.
It might be, yes. I was thinking maybe 87, Vaux Rogue out in front, Bont might be out in front, and Rubiton stalking late.
So who are you tipping in the end, lads? So you're with a tie, Hamish.
I'm with a tie.
Do you have those players that will be featuring in the tie?
I'll give you the four that my man has.
Yep.
He's got Oliver Wines, Steele, Bont. My tie is Steele, Bont, Oliver. I think that it's funny about Wines. So no one's stealing them from him. But I was just looking at his voting history. He doesn't seem to poll huge numbers. Now, hopefully it's wrong, but I think Bont's going to get out to a flyer, after a flyer, and Oliver's going to be constant through the year, and Steele's going to charge home. And I have absolutely, I might get that completely wrong. Maybe Wines wins it outright.
Dino?
Oliver Wines for me. I know his polling history's a bit average. I think he's been more of a standout this year than ever. He's been a good player for a lot of years, but I think he's stood out a bit this year.
Is there a roughie that could surprise someone out wide, do a Prittis?
Well, so if you went down the order from, you know, the guy that knows all, so he's got the four as the top four. Then he's got not dissimilar for the market, but Sam Walsh is knocking on the door of the four with Petrarca. Then Parrish and Mitchell, Miller with the asterisk next to his name, Boak, Merritt. They're the names he's got voting 20 plus. So if there's a name to come from outside the four, I would think it's one of those. Sam Walsh, you know, they don't win a heap of games, the Carlton Football Club, eight only, but he's going to be more often than not the standout in the wins, and they lost a few tight ones. Maybe he's around the place, but Petrarca was going to be favourite by round 6 in this guy's minds. They win a lot of football in the middle of the Demons, and they win a lot of matches. So they've got a 17 and a half game season.
I can get you $4 the tie. I think that's a great bet there with the tab. $4.
Well, I'm not betting just because it looks ridiculous if I have a win and looks more stupid if I have a loss. But that's what I would be doing.
Yep. All right, then. That's what we'll be doing here on RSN Central. Dino? Would you consider that?
Definitely. Is there like a top five market?
Top three, top five markets. You can multi a few up. The other thing you can think about is, you know, your club. So my guy, inverted commas, says that Guthrie wins the Cats by about 6 votes. He's got Dustin Martin from Revolt by about 6 votes. He's got Kelly winning the Giants by about 7 votes. Jack Steele unbackable, so don't even worry about that. He's got Parker and Mills really tight at the Swans.
Okay.
Lions winning the Lions. Oliver winning the Demons. Walker being an early leader of the whole count, but Laird winning the Crows.
Okay.
Who else have I got for you? Mundy's wins Dockers. So it rolls on.
I can give you $4.50 for the Oliver Wines Quinella, Dino.
Yeah, okay.
Taylor Walker after round five, $2.50, sorry, Dino, to be leading.
Yeah. No, my little roughie to finish top, well, maybe top five or top ten is Luke Parker. I thought he'd be clearly the winner at the Swans, but there you go.
I would think, and I said this, I had this argument, that Parker is a proven vote getter.
Yeah.
He plays right there with the umpires. He's known. I reckon Mills isn't quite as noticeable and isn't quite as big a name. And just human exactly. nature, you go Parker, then Mills. So I would be thinking that Luke's your guy for the Swans. The other news that I have for you for our Melbourne fans, Goody has just texted. Not breaching any confidences, I wouldn't have thought. But no, all good, mate. Either food poisoning or some gastro, I'll be fine.
Great news. Off the press there, Simon Goodwin. Food poisoning. It'd be a difficult time to get food poisoning, but that's good news for the Demon fans. Only last 24 hours. Derek Kickett comes to mind. A host of votes coming in for Derek.
Oh, yeah, 93, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Maybe Jackie could dress up in a VB-style dress or a Melbourne Bitter-style dress.
What are the odds there?
Yeah, million to one. You're forgetting McRae, lads. A lot of votes for McRae.
Yeah, so no one's ever had more of the football than him. So he this year has ended up with 858 touches, goes past 854 disposals. He could become the 11th Bulldog. So he's betting history, 15 last year, 22 the year before, 14 the year before. So he's not, you know, deep in the votes, but he's noticed and he's probably...
Does he get it? You know, does he take enough off the bond?
That's the point, isn't it? So does he take too many off the bond to cost the bond, or does the bond get all the threes? The market also... When I speak to the guy that does this for a living, has Bont getting the most threes for the year and Jack Steele the second most threes for the year.
Hi, guys.
Jack Steele got 20 votes last year.
Yeah.
Prior to that, 1-1-3-0-0. Bontempelli, he's a vote getter, but...
You're going pretty well if you've got the Brownlow medalist giving you a birthday cheerio in the same year. You turned 53. Hi, guys. The nap is the best bet you can have. A nap's bracket sleep and wake up to collect your winnings. That's from Jay from Mortielli.
So that's where the nap comes
Correct.
From.
Yep.
Have a sleep and just know that it's happening. Don't even have to have the stress
press
of
refresh.
Watching it.
Yes.
Yeah,
when Dino
refresh.
Picks your horse as his best of the day, it ensures it'll be a good day. That's from Bear from Tassie. You tipping Heller is the
Heller.
Best bet, yes.
One of the best, yes.
Okay. The Tassie boys are all over that. Gee, Scotty Brunt doesn't declare them too often, Dino. He's declaring the mayor comes Saturday to lead all of the way. In fact, he's pretty confident by the end of the spring that Heller will surpass, and this is a big call, Mystic Journey, and also still a star as the best mayor in Tassie.
Yeah, I hope he doesn't want to lead all the way. He's going to get pressured, but she should win anyway. Yep.
He will be changing his tactics now because they will be listening. Hawley, what about Mitch Wallace missing the premiership? Regards, Steve. You have to feel for him. He was the captain of this side last year, Hamish.
Was that regards, Steve?
Mitch Wallace.
Yeah, but was it regards, Steve, from the text message?
Yes, Steve, yeah.
Might have been his old man.
Yes.
Yeah. Steve Wallace.
Hi, Garrett. Just starting to rain in Geelong. Geelong races, rain affected again. That's from Nikki. Dino, have you, with your Friday fill-up, have you taken that into consideration?
Not really. I knew they were going to have showers. I heard this morning Jimmy Dalton say he thought they might be lighting a bit later, but those seems as though they've rolled in early.
The Friday fill-up today, Dino?
Well, I like a first starter, so maybe early on the day. Race 2, number 1, Fjord. This is the sister to Groundswell and Shoals.
Okay.
And has trolled up well. I think it's a very suitable race off barrier 1. But it was the best.
We're going to host.
Can I just give a story from last week, just quickly? Gareth rang me post-show and said, I've got a horse for you to back tomorrow in Perth. I said, okay. He said, I think you should back it. The trainer says only one danger. I said, okay. So should I back it now or tomorrow? He said, no, I think the price will hold up. So I'll wait till the next morning. The price goes from 420 into 350. So Gareth gets that one wrong. But given that I enjoy a bet, I have a bet. The horse that he says is the danger goes from $8 out to $13. Dino, have a think about what happens here. I back Gareth at 350.
Yeah. It doesn't win.
It dead
the $13.
Heats.
Oh, dead
it
heats.
It dead heats. But you know what Gareth says to me? Have a saver. Thing that's a threat. Did I? No. I just took half price on the winner. It's a funny game, racing.
It took 20,
it's a character building exercise.
It took 21 minutes. I was a little
21 minutes.
There was a three-way finish at Belmont, the closest finish all day around the country in the photo.
Did they take
down.
It down to the local chemist to get developed?
Yeah, they got it developed, and the lady got some lovely shots here. Yeah.
21 minutes, I couldn't believe it. Hey, Dean, I've got a host of SMSs coming through about asking you about the races tomorrow, but there's one horse I want to ask you about. This is Forbes. Remember, he was all of the rage one day at Sandown.
Animo.
Do I remember? And I think Hamish might remember too.
Animo beat him.
Animo. And you think, who is this bloody Godolphin horse that jumped out the ground to defeat him? Does he win tomorrow at $7.50, Dino?
Well, he's got some issues, Forbes. He's a talent. If you watch his most recent trial, so they've been having barrier issues with him and loading, and he actually went round to the start of the trial about 10 minutes prior and they loaded him up. And he was in there that long, I think he probably actually fell asleep and missed the start 10 lengths. The trial was extraordinary. You just don't want to see him miss the start 10 lengths tomorrow. He won't be beating that field. If you could trust him to do everything right, he's got the talent to win. He form ties in with General Bow and all of those horses that he's running against. He's just got to get it right on the day.
Is 55 and a half a fair enough weight for incentivising in a Caulfield Cup?
Absolutely. Yeah. The rationale's spot on. If you'd got 56, I wouldn't have even been surprised. They showed their hand at weight for age. You don't do that before the handicaps. They must be very confident that he'll win with 55 and a half as well, because they picked up a $600,000 check last Saturday winning a Group One, but they've put in danger the Caulfield Cup and the Melbourne Cup by getting an extra 2.5 kilos. So they must be very confident that he's better than his rivals.
And this is another good question coming through from Tom. So Dino, what's the difference between winning a Maccabi Diva and getting a penalty, and then competing in a Turnbull and winning and not getting a penalty?
Because the weights are out and it's set weights. So the weights are established. So all incentivised had to do was wait 3 days and not show his hand at level weights against established Group 1 horses. If he'd run in the open handicap on Saturday, the 1700, he'd have won that. It was 61. He'd have got 53.5. But he showed himself to be at level weights better than Moonga and Sir Dragonay at this stage. So all of a sudden, the handicapper has got a benchmark on his talent against Group 1 horses.
If you had to choose one horse right now to own for the spring, incentivise, Saki, Nature Strip or Animo, just for the spring, which one would you have, Dino?
Well, I would like to win a Cox Plate, so it would be Saki or Animo. If I wanted money, I think Nature Strip's a great chance of winning the Everest. No, I'll go Saki. Yep. I think Saki's a... He's an unfolding story. I don't think, we're amazed at the rapid rate of improvement of incentivised. I think the people in the Northern Hemisphere can't believe what Zaki's doing.
And as the racing manager for incentivised, Dino, you've always said to us on this show on several occasions that the best lead-up race to the Cox Plate is the Caulfield Cup.
Can be, absolutely. The seven-day backup do very little in between and they always run well. So I think they're going in light into the Caulfield Cup with that in mind, because he's only going to have the two runs into the Caulfield Cup and there's a chance he'd back up. I wouldn't want to be touching him at all for the Melbourne Cup. I think, I don't know if that's, if he completes the treble, that would be unbelievable. But I think Caulfield Cup with a look at the Cox Plate.
Dino, Moonga, who is right there next to incentivise, does it look like a Turnbull Cox Plate campaign?
Well, if he runs in the Turnbull, Hayman, that's the talk, then he's got either 3 weeks to the Cox Plate and stays down here, or 4 weeks to freshen up and go back to Sydney for the Golden Eagle. Now, is he going like a horse that can win a 1,500-metre race? I'm not sure. Did this problem with Ayrton change their mind, because Ayrton was shaping as the main danger in the Golden Eagle, and do they go back to the Epsom and back to the Golden Eagle? So I think there's a lot to unfold in the next couple of weeks, and that Golden Eagle, all of a sudden, a horse like I'm Thunderstruck, if he ran well tomorrow, all of a sudden Mick Price and Junior might be still in the game with a different horse, not Ayrton, but I'm Thunderstruck.
You need a lot of luck, especially with the future betting, because you can do all of the homework and be right on the money, and then a bloody spider comes along and bites your horse.
It's incredible, isn't it, that could happen. But I'm hoping that Colette's the one for the spring, Gareth, in the Caulfield Cup. That's the long ranger for me at a bit of a price.
I've just been watching Fox Footy in the office here. 1994, Gary Lyon just destroying people. Is it too much to ask Dino to bring collars back on the jumpers? God, they look good.
Yes.
Yeah, they
look
great.
Them.
Oh, yeah. So good.
Hey, lads, you enjoy your weekend.
Dino, how could you not?
Dominate tomorrow. I'll catch you from 8 a.m. tomorrow morning, of course, for the Melbourne Forum panel. Enjoy Sunday night, Hamish. Let us know if there's a wardrobe change with Jackie.
Well, I'll let you know then. Yeah, if there's a market, I can assure you all of our listeners will know what we should be backing.
Yep. And I tell you what, as we end the Dean and Hamish today, I'll throw to Bob Murphy accepting his premiership medal when the Bulldogs finally broke through for that premiership against the Swans back in 2016 it was. And I watched it again and it made me cry watching this. So hopefully Nathan Jones won't be able to do this on Saturday week. But this was a great moment. Enjoy your weekend, Dino and Hamish, and we'll catch up with you next week.
Thanks, guys.
See you.